This is Bob Glaser, author of Performance Partnerships, The Checkered Past, Changing Present, and Exciting Future of Affiliate Marketing, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help us both keep up with the latest ideas in the quickly changing fields of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction and save you some time. This show is a labor of love that I do in my spare time. My day job is running a marketing agency where we work with manufacturers and industrial companies to help them grow by helping them earn the attention and trust of their prospective customers. For more, check out our guide to lead generation for manufacturers on our website, salesartillery.com, or Google lead generation for manufacturers, and you'll find the guide atop the organic results. This episode is sponsored by David Meerman Scott's phenomenal New Marketing Mastery course that he developed with Tony Robbins. New Marketing Mastery will teach you step by step how to get your marketing in alignment with the way your customers want to buy. David spent 3 years putting together over 50 videos, dozens of infographics and worksheets, and a 50-page workbook to get your marketing to generate a lot more sales. And even nicer, Marketing Book Podcast listeners will get $500 off by entering promo code Marketing Book. To sign up, go to newmarketingmastery.com, but make sure to enter promo code Marketing Book for that $500 off. You can find a short video about the course and a link to it in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Robert Glaser to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, Performance Partnerships: The Checkered Past, Changing Present, and Exciting Future of Affiliate Marketing, published by Lioncrest. Bob Glaser is an international keynote speaker and founder and CEO of the Boston-based global performance marketing agency, Acceleration Partners. Bob is the author of the recently released book, Elevate, Push Beyond Your Limits and Unlock Success in Yourself and Others. And he is a regular contributor for Entrepreneur, Forbes, and Inc., to name just a few. And his inspirational Friday Forward posts are read by over 100,000 leaders around the world each week. And, interesting fact, the self-proclaimed king of all media, Howard Stern, attended Bob's bar mitzvah. Bob, congratulations on Performance Partnerships, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks, Douglas. Great to be here.
So, Howard Stern. Yeah, you know, but I think listeners will notice that there was not a listener advisory at the beginning of this episode. So we're gonna keep it kind of clean, unlike that gentleman that attended your bar mitzvah.
It's not serious. Excellent.
Oh, that's right. It's not. So your recent book, Elevate, I noticed that's an Ignite read, which is a series of books, and I recently interviewed an author, Paul Smith, who his book was an Ignite read, and another coincidence, he's a fellow alumnus of the University of Pennsylvania for you.
Oh, I do not know him. Maybe we'll have to connect.
I will connect you because we're starting to get some more Penn grads on the show, and I even interviewed a professor from Penn not too long ago, Peter Fader. I don't know if he was ever one of your marketing professors.
He wasn't, but I don't know if I know that name. Yeah, there's a lot of Penn people out there, particularly in marketing and culture these days where I'm spending a lot of my time.
Yeah. So it was a fantastic book. And so anyway, Penn folks represent. I noticed a number of really well-known people endorsing your book at the beginning, including a few that I've had the honor to interview. And I noticed one very interesting comment or endorsement by Mark Roberge, who was with HubSpot, and he was a guest on the podcast a couple years ago about his excellent book, Sales Acceleration, where he talked about how he built the HubSpot sales organization, and he had no sales background. And I just wanted to quote from that. He said, from the perspective of a sales leader, you only want to pay for marketing that delivers the desired outcomes. In performance partnerships, Robert masterfully takes us through the history of affiliate marketing and its transformation into a partnership-oriented and brand-controlled channel that can deliver outcomes in a cost-effective manner. There isn't a CMO who could not benefit from embracing this next generation of affiliate marketing to grow their business. And he calls this a must-read. And then I just wanted to quote from the foreword, which is by Cameron Harold. He says, I am convinced that performance marketing in general and performance partnerships in particular will become the dominant form of digital marketing over the next decade. And he also goes on to say, there isn't a company in the world that could not benefit from more partnerships built on a performance model. And then as a former New York ad guy, you quoted John Wanamaker, which just warmed the cockles of my heart because
Love that quote.
I heard that from so many clients over the years and tried to a fake laugh when I heard it. And he's famous for saying, he was a retailer in Philadelphia area, marketing pioneer, born in 1838, died in 1922. And he said, half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half. And after reading your book, I could certainly see how performance partnerships and affiliate marketing would have warmed the cockles of John Wanamaker's heart.
Yeah, and he said that, he said that over 100 years ago. And the sad thing is that, you know, most companies with their reams of data and business intelligence aren't much better than that rule 100 years later.
Sad but true. The problem I see a lot of companies have is they think that they can measure everything. And I'd like to say you can measure every single thing. You can measure a lot and you can measure a lot more, but you can't have total certainty. And yeah, there is a bit of arbitrage in the, you know, in the marketing world where we're the ones that try the new things first are usually doing better, but there's not always a case study. So on the beginning of the book, you talk about one of my favorite movies called The Big Short. And The Big Short, as you say, is a 2015 movie based on Michael Lewis's best-selling novel of the same name, charting the expansion and calamitous bursting of the subprime mortgage securities bubble in the United States. So, Bob, why do you talk about that movie and what did it have to do with you and the affiliate marketing world?
Yeah, so the scene reminded me, I mean, now it's probably, I can't even get their year right, but it's probably 12 or 13 years ago of going to trying to understand the industry, going to my first industry conference, feeling this like casino atmosphere where everyone was just making money and it was easy and it was bro-y. And I'm sort of naturally a contrarian. And I just don't believe anything is that easy and there's easy money. And I remember coming out of the event, if I hadn't found one or two people, I would have thought that it was just the same feeling from that movie scene and from the book of like, well, either I'm missing something or this is like a huge Ponzi scheme.
Right.
You know, because it just seems too easy. It doesn't seem right. And I think, you know, when I actually came into the industry, it was really at the furor of the height of Gen 1 that I outlined in the book, which is kind of the first phase of affiliate marketing in which no one had any context for attribution. And so it was all about just growing quote unquote affiliate revenue. And so everyone was looking like a genius, but while I was fascinated with the model and believed inherently in the core model of paying for performance and paying for outcomes or results, it just, the types of people, you know, similarly like to a subprime mortgage company, it felt more like a Vegas casino.
Right. It was too good to be true.
Than a legitimate, you know, high credential marketing crowd.
Yeah. So I mentioned what some of these other folks said about affiliate marketing and how everyone can benefit from it. Sadly, I've had over 260 interviews. This is the first book about affiliate marketing. So thank you for writing it, because I've been wanting to talk about it. But it applies to a lot more companies than I think people realize. But let's step back and explain what affiliate marketing is, and then we can get into performance marketing.
Yeah, and really the term that's taking over is sort of partner marketing. But you know, affiliate marketing at its core is just a relationship between, and we'll use like a brand and a merchant. A brand and a publisher. So is like a relationship between like an Acme Corp and various publishers who sell things online or talk about content online, where instead of paying for a click or paying for a banner ad or otherwise, they sort of enter into a partnership that is tracked. And the website can talk about, promote the product, the company, whatever it might be. Every click that they send is tracked through to conversion. And then when there is a lead or is a sale, the payment is made to the publisher. So it is a true performance-based relationship where you are paying for outcomes. And I think it's a little bit under the radar just from a general visibility, but they typically make up 15 to 20% of all online shopping. I mean, Amazon has one of the largest affiliate programs in the world, Amazon Associates. I think there's probably over 1 million people in it, and there's rumors that it's up to 20% of Amazon's revenue. And basically, it's this on-demand workforce or sales force, kind of similar to Uber, that's out there with who controls the content and websites and social communities and email groups, you know, writing and sharing and about products and services, but only getting paid for an outcome. So there's some risk sharing in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. So is this only for B2C, or does it apply to B2B as well?
It's a lot of B2C. It's a lot of B2SMB. We're seeing more in B2B. But it really works well when you have like a lot of high volume. But there's a lot of things in B2B where what you need is that third party. So in B2B, you often don't have that third party, right? You just have the sort of merchant and the customer. There's not tons of places online where people, you know, enterprise companies are going for business services where they're ability to make a referral. But it probably looks, in B2B, it looks more like channel or referral marketing, where they're essentially the same agreements. People are getting paid, you know, for referrals and stuff behind the scenes. It's just not all done online. One of the core things of affiliate marketing is that ability to scale it comes from the fact that because the transactions happen online and you can know where they came from, you know, you could have hundreds or thousands of partners using a software in a program where managing each one of those things individually would have been entirely inefficient.
Right. So then, help us understand the difference between affiliate marketing and what you call performance marketing. My fear is that they're being used interchangeably.
Yeah, so we actually use partner marketing. So now, even since the book is coming out, so what happened was the affiliate industry a little bit tried to rebrand around performance marketing. And because there was a lot of stuff in affiliate, there was a lot of email list swaps, there was a lot of lead gen stuff that was just kind of an unsavory part of affiliate, which is just an unsavory part of using the same model in the wrong way. Just like you can have unsavory marketing. It's not endemic to the whole thing. It was just a subset. So I think part of the industry started to gravitate towards performance marketing, since you were paying for performance. The core of that was sort of a CPA. And then search and social and all of the email all started calling themselves a performance marketing, and it got to be a confusing tent. So I think one of the things that has accelerated, you know, the title of the book was Performance Partnerships, and the newer players in the industry, and I think the industry now really is coalescing around partner marketing. I think that's going to be the term that affiliate marketing is probably known as over the next couple of years.
So you mentioned CPA, cost per action. Just to help set the table for that aren't familiar, what are some of the terms related to understanding more about cost per action? Some of the other, if you will, a little bit of a glossary here.
Yeah, so like an action could kind of be three primary things, I think, in most cases. Probably be a lot more, particularly with mobile. And in these days, you could actually get really smart, and it could be an action tied to a business. So let me, I'll even explain that. An action could be a lead. It could be someone filled out a lead form. It could be that lead form was accepted. It could be a sale, which is obviously revenue. Or the technology is allowing people to tie these payment points deeper into their workflow. So think of like a ride sharing company like a Lyft or Uber. You know, they might set up like their partner program or affiliate program for drivers to, and let's say they're partnering with like job board sites who say, oh, you're looking for a job. why don't you drive with Lyft? You can make this amount of money. Well, Lyft could embed the technology so that, like, when the driver was referred and they went through the ID verification process, there could be a small payment. And then literally maybe as they take their first ride and swipe and hit, they're done with their first ride, the payment actually goes out to the publisher months later who referred that. The advances in technology are making it really cool because, again, rather than having to bet on a lead, like, you're paying per ride completed. Like, that didn't used to be kind of a metric that you could pay on, but we're seeing people do, you know, deep integrations. You can imagine maybe like a business model like an Airbnb or a HomeAway or a HomeShare. They could say, you know what? We have found that when people look at four or five properties and save one to their cart, that, you know, 6 months later, they have an 80% chance of buying with us. So we could actually make that like a commissionable action when someone comes, like an engagement based action. When they come to the site and do the following things, then we're going to commission them based on that. So that's the really cool aspect of the model for a business, is really trying to tie what's important to it, like, which usually isn't traffic or hits or other things. And then I don't think a lot of people are clear. One of the cool things about affiliate or partner is, like, you are literally paying for your marketing after you get the sale. That's a pretty powerful thing. And mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, if that thing is canceled or otherwise, like, you don't pay the commission. Your performance marketing from Google and Facebook or otherwise, when that person doesn't buy, you can't go back. You can measure it, but you can't go back to Google and Facebook and say, we'd like our money back. They didn't buy. And I'm sure they tell you, you know where you can go.
Right. But with Google, at least, I mean, you are paying for the click, not for the other 95% of people that visit that results page and don't click.
You're right. I mean, but that's a steep funnel, right? So you're paying for the click, but then, you know, a purchase rate based on click is probably, on a good website, is still 2-3%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're averaging it, right? So you're saying, hey, if the sale's worth $100 and it takes 100 clicks, then I pay $1 a click. You know, we're saying, like, if you really want to get smart about your sources, like, pay $100 for the sale. Don't pay $1 for 100 clicks.
Right. So you talk about the things that you really have to have for the, you know, an effective partnership. You talk about at the beginning of the book, and then you reprise it at the end. And you have to have that, you know, cost per action, that CPA. But you also talk about the importance of transparency. Talk about, well, I mean, everyone would think, yeah, of course, but that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, so there are four elements to what I would consider a performance partnership, as we would design it. Because, again, affiliate marketing, if you want, to me, it's like Chianti Classico a little bit. Like, Chianti Classico is from a very specific region in Italy. Other people can't call it that. Anyone else can put anything in a bucket and call it Chianti.
Mm-hmm. I think, like champagne.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. That's how people feel about affiliate. Like, we spend a lot of time in affiliate marketing, but to me, two sort of people selling like sketchy nutraceuticals, offering 80% commissions and swapping lists with each other is not what I like to associate with affiliate marketing. So, right. So that's why when I talk about the definition of performance partnerships, there's the CPA payout, there's transparency, like, you know your partners, you know what they're doing, you know what the traffic sources are. It wasn't like that in Gen 1. It was like, don't ask, don't tell. It was kind of, if I got the sale, I don't have a right to know where it comes from. And that's because a lot of these Gen 1 companies were pure play internet companies without brand departments and, you know, who actually cared how you got the sale. The other thing is that there's a relationship and partnership. Like, you're using this technology platform, you have this, but you know the people you're working with. You know, it's not just transactional. You're in a relationship with them. Your tracking goes down, you make good to them. You know, that something else happens, they make good to you. Like, it's the first generation of affiliate marketing was just super transactional. It was, you got a sale, don't ask how you got it, you know, and let's not even talk.
Yes. And you know what that reminds me of? The banks that were offering mortgages to people that knew that, they couldn't pay them back.
Right.
So,
and so if you're not willing to talk or ask questions, so if someone joined one of our programs and just kills it off the bat from day one or two, or week one or two, the way that we run programs and the philosophy today, it would not be like, oh, this is amazing, like, do more. It would be like, hey, Douglas, we'd love to get on the phone and make sure we understand how you're promoting and your methods and what's going on here, because we don't really, we're looking at your sites and we don't really see the connection between, you know, mortgage futures and Reebok sneakers. Right. So
something's going on there.
Right. We like to chat. But 10 years ago, the account manager who would, and the network were all commissioned on, you know, affiliate revenue would have been like, give me more. Like, I don't even care. I don't want to know what it is. Give me more.
Yeah, I don't want to know where you got these parts for the car. I just want you to put them on. And let's talk about who some of these players are, though. And I do, as part of this, I want to talk about the guy that did actually go to prison.
Yeah.
But there, you say there's two primary groups of participants in the affiliate marketing world, people who sell things and people who market things. So
yeah,
who are these players? The heroes, the villains, go.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is if you think about today versus maybe 20 or 30 years ago, you had to be really good at 20, 30 years ago, you had to be good at making the thing, marketing the thing, selling the thing, servicing the thing. And what the internet has sort of done is compartmentalized this. So the sites, for the most part, other than like an Amazon, who get the most traffic online, are content sites, news sites, people where they're researching, all these places.
Publishers.
And they don't, yeah, publishers. They publish information. They have audiences. And they don't sell products, you know, for the most part. And then you have these retailers who are good at taking orders and delivering in customer service and otherwise. And obviously they market, but they're not known for their content, or they're not a place that people go to hang out to find information and things. They go to buy. And so it's created a great opportunity for these people to partner in a performance ecosystem where the brands figure out how much it's worth to them to get a sale, and they offer that out, and the publishers do this. So, you know, if you've been reading mom blogs for a year, if you go into comparison shopping sites, if you've been, you know, reading lists with the media companies like CNN Underscored and other large publishers that are BuzzFeed, that are kind of product reviews and these sites, none of these people are doing this out of goodness of their heart. And you'll see the disclaimers. They are either selling ads or they're increasingly joining these performance-based programs where, you know, there's a mattress review and there's four mattresses and it links to four merchants. And if you click on buy on one of those, they get it. And, you know, the social media and the influencers, like all of these people are compensated for their reach and their ability to drive sales. So really, it's just bringing the two parties together. And, you know, Amazon's in a really interesting place because, you know, Amazon is a really good logistics and delivery company. People just automatically go there for their like discretionaries, you know, toilet paper and the things and batteries. I mean, they don't do a lot of research, but typically like the way that, if you believe the stats that are true, that like 20% of the people come to Amazon through the Associates program, when people are exploring a product or doing a research or finding something, they're actually learning about that somewhere else, and then are being redirected to retailers such as Amazon for the sale.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break here so I can tell you more about David Meerman Scott's new Marketing Mastery course and a very generous discount he's offering to Marketing Book Podcast listeners. Two books have had the biggest impact on my marketing career, and one of them is David Meerman Scott's The New Rules of Marketing and PR. Naturally, I'm a big fan of David Meerman Scott, which is why he was the very first guest on the Marketing Book Podcast and why he's returned several times. His new Marketing Mastery course, 3 years in the making, in collaboration with Tony Robbins, teaches you step-by-step the most important aspects of modern marketing so that your marketing can drive dramatically better sales results. Many of the mistakes I see companies make in their marketing can be avoided by following what's recommended in this comprehensive course. The new Marketing Mastery course has over 50 videos, over 25 infographics and worksheets, and a 50-page workbook that gives you step-by-step instructions on topics like buyer personas, content, social media, and building a business growth plan. Now, you can continue spending money, having a good time going to marketing conferences or hiring consultants, but for a lot less, you can get this course, implement what he teaches, and start seeing measurable results. And your whole team can use it, which is why it's a great way to train your marketing team, particularly new hires. The knowledge you can get from the latest edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR is why I continue to recommend it as the one book to help people get a better handle on what they need to understand about modern marketing and the modern buyer. Now, With this course, you can learn how to turn that knowledge into action. The secret to getting ahead is getting started. For you to get started, go to newmarketingmastery.com and enter the promo code MARKETINGBOOK to get $500 off the price. Go to newmarketingmastery.com and make sure to enter promo code MARKETINGBOOK to get $500 off. I also have a video about the course and a link to it in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And now back to the show. Explain the problem with the networks, though. I couldn't help but kind of get the feeling that a lot of problems were with the networks, and there were also conflicts of interest.
Yeah. So what happened in this Gen 1 20 years ago was affiliate marketing got really popular. There were a bunch of mergers, and there became the emergence of what's known as full service affiliate networks. And what affiliate network does is they solve the one to many problem in this sort of marketing, which is if everyone had to do relationships directly with publishers and have 100 different, you know, accounts, and it would be a nightmare. So what happened was both publishers and merchants join a network, and you kind of house your program on a network, and the network took care of all the payments and tracking. And if I'm a publisher, I could log into the network and there's a directory of all the programs, and I can join once. And then at the end of the month, I get paid for all the programs that I earned money with. So it was like a market clearing function that made a lot of sense. But what happened was, you know, because of that, networks represented both merchants and publishers. It's sort of like dual agency in real estate. And even though the merchants are paying,
and a dual agent is
someone who represents the buyer and the seller,
right?
And what's the problem with that? Why do they have to have a disclosure? Because as the buyer, your agent actually gets paid more the more you pay for the house. It's actually the opposite incentive that you would like to have. And the same dynamic existed in this, when the merchants are paying the bill and the fee for this service, but the network is actually getting paid more the more that their publishers get paid. And they have publisher managers and people who advocate for the publishers, but the merchants are paying the fee. And so what happened was that was a platform, but they also, people didn't know how to do affiliate marketing. So they started managed services and account management. And so they're managing programs on their platform where they get paid more the more that you pay. This one set of partners. And that has some clear inherent conflicts of interest. I wrote an article probably 8, not 10 years ago now on this. Everyone told me I was crazy. I was like, you're crazy for not seeing that there's, I feel more comfortable, you know, the networks all kind of responded pretty negatively to that. And I said, look, I feel much more comfortable if you told me, here's how we mitigate this, than to tell me it actually doesn't happen, because it's there. And what happens is the account managers, so there's a performance fee. So every dollar that goes through the network, the network gets a percentage of that dollar, the commission paid. And the account managers were always incentivized by those performance fees. So I'm managing the program and I find out that, you know, Douglas's podcast site is really like doing $1 million a month and is a front for some illegal activity.
The Russian mob, yeah.
Yeah, and as the account manager, because you're cookie stuffing all over the internet, if I go remove Douglas's, you know, amazing podcast from the program, I've now lowered the fees for the program. So I'm in charge of running this program, but I have zero incentive to like take anything out of the program or shut anyone or attack fraud, because I actually get paid for that. Yeah. And people just really didn't realize this dynamic, and it emerged differently than other industries, where if I said, you know, are you comfortable with Google being your paid search agency or Facebook being your paid social agency? Everyone's like, no. I mean, they're the platform, and obviously they want to sell me more stuff. So I've got an agency that's in charge of ROI. And so that's how Acceleration Partners was born, because our company, and which was, look, there needs to be an agency in this who actually represents the brand and who works with the network, who clearly was representing both parties.
Yeah, but you're working on behalf of the brand. And it was another great example of filling an unmet need. Now, so is this related to the guy that went to prison?
Yeah. So what happened was, and there's more details in the book about the story, was, you know, because of these incentives, some, you know, pretty ugly stuff went on, because no one wanted to shut this stuff down because everyone was making a lot of money back to the casino era. And the eBay program, which was on the Commission Junction Network, I think at the time, had an affiliate in the program who was doing some pretty you know, dirty stuff or cookie stuffing, right? You know, the exact details are sort of unclear. And he just kept generating more and more sales and more and more sales. And cookie stuffing is a way of taking credit for stuff that didn't originate from you. And, you know, everyone, instead of looking at this skeptically, and this goes to both sides, right? I mean, the in-house manager who's presumably, you know, getting pats on the back and told they're great, and the network management team and the compliance team, you know, everyone's making a lot more money, and it got so big that I think they paid this guy like, you know, $18 or $19 million in commissions without really raising a lot of red flags as you would have along the way, because I think no one wanted to kill the golden goose, and I think there ended up being a lawsuit and people went to jail, and his defense was, these guys knew exactly what I was doing. Like, the account manager knew, everyone knew, I asked them, I told them, but like, they were getting raises and bonuses and looking good. So they're just as complicit. But it was sort of a huge wake up call on the fox in the hen house, and how, you know, just focusing on volume and not understanding attribution had gotten way out of control. And it actually led eBay to leave Commission Junction and form their own networks, you know, because they said, look, we need someone looking out for us.
Yeah. So you did use the term Wild West a few times in the book, and
yeah,
very appropriately named. So let's talk about a concept that's very important for marketers, whether they're in affiliate marketing or not. And it's sort of a, you know, one of those arguments that just is never completely resolved, but people want it to be resolved. And that has to do with attribution.
Yeah.
So explain what attribution is and how that has played a role in the development of online marketing and affiliate marketing, you know, things like first click, last click, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So attribution is huge, and people ignored it for years. They didn't have the data. They sort of knew it. But so let's imagine, like, there are multiple channels in marketing, and people who tend to use tools to track whether each of these channels resulted in a sale. And, you know, so a lot of times, you know, when in maybe 20 years ago, there weren't as many channels, that maybe there's just email and direct, there wasn't social and mobile and all kinds of things. They just came up with a rule. Oh, well, first in gets credit, or last in gets credit, or something like that. So the first in, you know, would get credit for the revenue and the cost of that channel. Well, what happened was that complexified, and there were a lot more channels. And when people did not have proper attribution, every channel was kind of coming in and counting the revenue from where it was involved in that customer journey and claiming all the credit for the revenue. So it was like, if your marketing team got together at the end of the month and email said, we did a million this month, and social said, we did a million, and affiliate said, we did a million, and, you know, someone else searched said, we did a million, and then the CMO says, guys, we did like 2 million in sales last month. What the hell are you, right. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
So there was no it was so it's basically like if salespeople all called on the same person and then it closed and then everyone wanted their commission.
Mm-hmm.
And until the technology sort of caught up to how do we attribute it, everyone was just overcounting. And what happened with affiliate is, because it was pay per performance, because it was last in, affiliates just figured out how to be last. They figured out how to intercept, get people going back to the cart, stuff cookies, take makeup coupons to get people to click on it right when they're about to buy. And they played the game they were given, and they did it really well. And so everyone was like, oh, our affiliate program's killing it. But when you when you acquire a customer via email, they go to your cart, they go all the way through, they click on a coupon that doesn't exist, and then the coupon site gets paid for it. Like, that's a gross misjustice to how they actually got there. So when people actually understood attribution and that not all affiliate revenue was good revenue, it just kind of shook up the whole game. And for a lot of people, they didn't have anything else to replace it with once the easy money was taken away from them in their program.
So talk about how these merchants are now fine-tuning their attribution and getting a little more realistic about it.
Yeah, so they have the ability to set up these programs to either, you know, only pay in certain circumstances based on the model. Was the person first? Was there last? Was there not another channel in there? And they should disclose all that to the publishers. And or that data comes in from the affiliate network. It's put into a multi-attribution model based on their rules. And they say, you know, I know the affiliate channel, you know, you said it was 2 million last month, but you really get 750K credit. Well, that makes them go back to the publishers and look at the breakdown and think about how they're paying for that, them accounting for the overlap. And you know, probably you know, if they were getting 40% of the credit, then they're probably going to start paying them 40% of the amount. So it changed moving away from a lot of these large deal and loyalty program, which were very last in. And people were saying, but the model's great. How do we have more content partners and these, you know, product decision sites and review sites and people who are actually driving top of funnel incremental demand for our business and having who just haven't mastered how to jump in last minute and get paid for it?
Yeah. So earlier you mentioned that five to 15% of a company's online marketing portfolio could be associated with affiliate marketing, but you say it's rarely understood or even managed strategically. You know why? We're talking about a lot of money here. Is it just because it's such a small percentage and they're just busy figuring out other things, or is this sort of the redheaded stepchild of the digital portfolio for some of these companies?
It's not that it's small. It is the redheaded stepchild, and it's not that it's small. I think it's been misunderstood, and it's also been just people not understanding the resources that it takes. Like when we used to go into a company and we'd find there was a $50 million quote unquote affiliate program or quote unquote $50 million affiliate program and someone managing a half a time, we'd say, something seems off here. Like, either is not enough people or, you know, where is this $50 million program? You know, it turns out it's three affiliates doing a ton of, you know, high volume and of stuff that was low value. So, and because 50 million in paid search would have like a 5-person team. So I think there is a new understanding that there's some really interesting partners out there. There's a ton more people available to work with on a performance basis, but these need to be like different teams with senior level resource and analytics capability and recruiting and business development capability. And, you know, we have some programs that have 14 or 15 person global teams that we're working with because that's really what it takes to run the channel. So I think when a lot of people thought you could make a lot of money without a lot of work, and that was because of the days of misunderstanding attribution, but that sort of prevalence of that staffing model continued. The smartest companies today are like, look, this is a real opportunity, but it's going to take real work. And I think that's the difference.
So you're saying that it's not likely to make a lot of money by not having to do a lot of work? Damn, was nobody going to tell me that?
It is likely to have the appearance of making right. a lot of money.
And it reminds me of the Fountain of Youth. Apparently it's in Florida and people are still... Looking for it. Yeah, it's just, but they still haven't found it. So another topic that was in the book, again, this goes beyond affiliate marketing, sort of like attribution, but remind listeners what influencer marketing is, and then explain what you mean when you say that influencer marketing is simply a form of affiliate marketing.
Yeah, I mean, influencers popped up 4 or 5 years ago. Really, you know, the same people moved to new channels. So the bloggers then became the sort of social media influencers. And when they did that, everyone got all excited about influencers and they started throwing tons of money at them and probably overpaid them. And then came to realize
I think the key term there, Bob, is throwing a lot of money at them. Still seems to be one of the belief systems of paying for influencer marketing.
Yeah, well, it sort of go both ways. When we had a roundtable of marketing executives last year, and I asked everyone, one of the questions I always ask is, all right, if you go back to last year, what would you double down on and where do you want your money back? Or what are you most excited about in the next year and where do you want your money back from last year? And they answered both to influencers to both. Like,
Really?
they thought it was intriguing, but they had, you know, it was going to be done differently. So when any new channel comes out, people start kind of overpaying and I call the suspension of metric disbelief. So just because it's a new channel, let's not measure it or look at it or otherwise, which just we can't stop ourselves from doing that.
Well, and everyone else is doing it.
Yeah. And the worst reason to do something is because everyone else is doing it. Not that you know that everyone else is making money doing it. Because
they say they're making money, right?
Because of the auction basis of marketing these days, inherently by nature, the more people that crowd into something, the less you make because the price goes up. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it worked for some early people, and then soon people are just writing fixed checks, no measurement, you know, nothing. Everyone's asking for free product, and I think influencers bifurcated. There's some high level influencers that the companies deal with that really are on a sort of, you know, pay for slotting, but still everyone wants tracking, and the rest of influencers have kind of fallen into the affiliate world, which they say, hey, you're a publisher, And so we should pay you and track and measure and see how it performs and pay you like that. And whether you join our affiliate partner program or otherwise, we got to put some metrics behind this.
That's good.
Yeah. This is what happens every channel. It starts with those rules being suspended, and then it falls in line with the other things. So that's why I say they're coming together. Most of the influencer departments, you know, they don't have the tools that we have to, they're managing everything in spreadsheets and following up with people. Look, we have the tools to say, hey, why don't you sign up? We'll look at your traffic. And, you know, we give free stuff to people after they hit $100 threshold, or they show us that they have any audience. So we, when we're talking with the companies, the business development teams, the other teams in the companies, it's kind of the opportunity to say, hey, look, you guys are going to deal with like the 10 or 20% of the people that have 80% of the volume that need all the customization and otherwise. We actually have this standardized program that'll work for the rest. And if you're not sure if someone's a couple hundred dollars or not, like, that's a good affiliate for us because we don't have to sign a contract. We don't have to do all this stuff. We don't have to pay them. It's all automated. Like, kick that over to the program here. And so that's some of the evolution we're seeing within a company.
Yeah. So you're in the agency world. I'm in the agency world. Now we got to talk about agencies. So, and I can only imagine, and I certainly hope that some of the things you've said about agencies have caused a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, and all for good reasons. But you say that there are still far too many agencies misrepresenting their affiliate marketing capabilities. How so? What's a typical scenario you hear about?
Yeah, I just... You know, marketing agencies do not like to tell people what they don't do. And this is particularly true for the big, you know, agency of record type organizations. And they'll take on something and they don't know how to do it, and they'll figure out afterwards, or grab someone and tell them to figure it out. Look, I understand it's marketing, but to me, that's like someone being like, oh yeah, I'll do that surgery. And then, you know, either I'll figure out someone to do it later, or like teach them example in a YouTube video, you know, how to do it. Like, I just don't think that's responsible. So we see a lot of companies not willing to say, because affiliate's complicated and most people haven't really built up a good practice area. They don't have enough people for it, but they're just afraid to be like, we don't do this, or we have like one person that does this. And so they take programs and then they figure out how to do it afterwards, and they make a mess of them. And I
call you guys and say, hey,
they call us afterwards and they say they'll take a country rather than be like, we don't do this, can we bring in a partner? They say sure. And you know, it just really frustrates me. Like, it's just fundamentally like malpractice. I think in any other industry but marketing we would call that fraud. but we don't here.
Right. And speaking of fraud, somewhat related, I found it very interesting you talked about fake news in the book. Explain how fake news actually affects the success of affiliate marketing.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to get people to click on things and buy them. And I was on the Dr. Oz show because he had a bunch of people say that he endorsed products and articles saying that he endorsed products, and then they would, you know, prey on people and buy it in social. So let's say it's a like scammy acne cream. Well, savvy marketers in Facebook can search people who've mentioned skin or otherwise or demographic, and then, you know, serve this miracle acne cream endorsed by Dr. Oz. And then that shady company is offering their affiliates 80% commission. And so now there's a product being endorsed that he actually didn't endorse. A publisher is fraudulently using that, kind of targeting someone. So, you know, you have to be careful. The whole acai berry thing, like, where all this news, oh, it's a, you know, saves the world, cures cancer, all this stuff, you know, click here to buy it. You know, people were making 80% commission on that. In that case, it was fundamentally untrue, the marketing premise on it. So yeah, I think fake news is, and particularly accelerated by social, is something we have to be really aware about, that there's people trying to sell us stuff, and they'll change the story if they think it sells us more stuff.
Mm. So in the book, you go into great depth about sort of the Wild West history of the affiliate marketing world. And, you know, there's more transparency now, there's better management, well, better than before. What are some of the key trends for the future of affiliate marketing that you see?
I think we're seeing a lot of the evolution of stuff in the book. I think global programs are becoming much more global on single platforms. Mobile is probably dominant in these programs now, and also people are much smarter about attribution. I think you're also going to see the growth of non-traditional partners as people try to move away from, they don't need any more coupon or loyalty programs in their site. They're pretty good on those. So what they want is new types of partners, new types of publishers, really building up that non-traditional segment of the program. I think you're also going to see people continue to license the software and say, this is our partner program, and put all kinds of stuff in it from different channels and different direct deals. And companies are going to have these kind of more holistic partner programs that made up kind of their old affiliate program, plus all these new relationships that are tracked using this same software and stuff that they control.
Interesting. My hunch is that you get asked all the time about the future.
I spend most of my days focused on the future. So the global is a big part, big growth part for us now. One of the things that we saw was like the ability to sign up for a platform that works globally exists today, but that's like buying a global tax preparation software, right? You can buy the software, but you still need to understand the nuances and the laws and the difference in each country. So it is both the opportunity and the challenge for a lot of these brands and how we built our business that they are signing up for a global program platform, but then they need help running a global program.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up. If readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I hope it would be that this is a really the best marketing channel when done smartly and correctly, and that they can see where and how to do that.
I would think that they could look back and think this really is the smartest thing they could be doing if they're doing it right.
Yeah, correct. You're talking about ROI. You're not going to get a better ROI than figuring out your ROI in advance. Right. You know, what it's worth to you.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah.
So what is one thing a listener could do today to put in action any of the ideas from your book?
I think what they could do is if they have a program.
Let's assume they have an affiliate program.
So they have an affiliate program, and if you haven't done this for a while, go print out your top 10 publishers, look at their conversion rates, look at their revenue, go look to the site, see where you can find yourself and how you're promoted, and be like, does this make sense with our brand? Do I understand what they're doing? Is there a clear association between that site and our brand? And that's a really good way to get a sense of whether your program may have some problems or some opportunities.
Well, I would add that they should go to affiliategrader.com.
They could also do that if they want to.
Tell about the Affiliate Grader.
Yeah, Affiliate Grader is a tool that we built to kind of give a quick scan of our the program and sort of score it on a variety of dimensions. Our team also tends to do a lot of more detailed audits. If someone wants a conversation, we'll take a look at the program and kind of come back to them with recommendations around opportunities or problems.
So what books have inspired your work and career?
One of the best books that I ever read was a book called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me.
I've heard a lot of people say that to me.
Yeah. A definitive book on cognitive dissonance. And I think it's such a powerful force in everything that we do and how we make decisions and understanding our ability to hold two different ideas in our mind and understand where we were wrong and not trying to protect ourselves. And it's been a very helpful and instructive book for me in my personal and professional development, because I think we all face dissonance like every day. If you go back to that eBay situation, right? There were a lot of people who had to sort of look the other way around things to make something like that happen at that scale. There was a lot of dissonance involved.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. Why We Justify Foolish Beliefs, Bad Decisions, and Hurtful Acts. Wow. By Carol Tavris and Elliot Aronson. We'll include a link to that at marketingbookpodcast.com. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you've heard of or recommend besides your book, Elevate?
I think there's actually going to be some more for people interested in partner marketing. There's a book Gino Pruskoff wrote called Affiliate Marketing, An Hour a Day. All the other books on affiliate marketing are about how to get rich quick as a publisher using affiliate marketing. I think
written by affiliate marketers.
Yeah, I think there's another book upcoming soon too. There's more. I think there's more books about the industry rather than like about how to make money. And you think about it, there's a lot of books on search or otherwise. We've been a little underrepresented.
Yes.
In this thing. The book I'm reading now is, and kind of related to this, is the book Range,
which is also really interesting about kind of how generalists today kind of outperform specialists by just having broader thinking and creative skills, by, you know, not kind of looking at the same thing all day long. It was recommended to me by a bunch of people and is a really good view on, you know, I think why people still even say, even, you know, there's half the people say, oh, go get a very specific technical education. And then yes. Others say, get a liberal arts education and learn how to think and look at things from multiple perspectives. And his answer is kind of split around. There's cases where both work better, and he makes a clear distinction.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of that. It's called Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World by David Epstein. Well, yeah. At marketingbookpodcast.com, like I mentioned, we're going to include links to your sites and the affiliate creator and your social media and your LinkedIn profile. I hope that listeners will reach out to you. And thank you for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is Performance Partnerships, The Checkered Past, Changing Present, and Exciting Future of Affiliate Marketing. The author is Bob Glazier. Bob, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks, Douglas. It's great to be here.
And that closes the book on episode 264 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat, and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Special thanks to our sponsor, David Meerman Scott's new Marketing Mastery course. Get $500 off with promo code MARKETINGBOOK when you check out at newmarketingmastery.com. And please join us next time as we welcome back Mike Weinberg to talk about his newest book, Sales Truth: Debunk the Myths, Apply Powerful Principles, Win More New Sales. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. This episode was produced by Amanda Harrison.